Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk Distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Dynamic Growth. Balanced Income. Select Growth and Income. The 401k Solution. Disciplined Equity. These are the KPP Financial programs designed to meet your goals and life situation. See more about them on investtalk.com. Click on the Investments tab. End of commercial, and now today's Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. It is March 17th, 2016, halfway through the month of March. Above average investing for the average investor. We try to help you take your game to the next level, as they say in sports. Since, you know, March Madness is upon us, I thought we'd use some sports analogies here. Investing is not really a game at all, though, Hal, because you're playing with real money here. And it has to last you the rest of your life. And that makes it pretty serious business. So let's get down to some of that serious business. Share some insights, some of the rules. If taken seriously, it will help you come out ahead. It really will. Our goal is to protect our money, your money, and make all of it grow. That's the deal. Our listener line is 888-99-CHART. You can call anytime you want. You can ask any kind of question you want, as long as it's financial. You can send me a note via email at Contact Steve. Click on Contact Steve on investtalk.com. You've heard me talk about real estate. Me and Justin, we both talk about real estate. And I've been, you know, an on-and-off real estate investor for years. I sold all my properties, I think, in 2004, a year or so right before the crash. And the reason why is because it can be a very important part of your overall wealth, your overall portfolio. I mean, it's one of the main ways people store wealth is in their property. So it's got to be factored into your financial plan. If you own a home, then there's a decision to make as you near retirement. Are you going to downsize? Are you going to hold on to it? Have you paid it off? Do you still have a mortgage? How much is a mortgage? How much is it going to cost you in retirement? Do you have enough money in retirement to support the house? So real estate can be a very good diversification tool as well. Okay, it does not have a correlation to the stock market, which is always good when you're looking for diversification. National Council of Real Estate Investment Fiduciaries did a study and found out that there really is no correlation. I think that's a great thing. And REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts, are a way to invest in real estate if you don't want to invest in property you own. So REITs is a very good way to do it. There are four kinds of REITs: private equity REITs, private debt REITs, public equity, and public debt REITs, depending on what area you want to focus on. And you can purchase a REIT that specializes in each division and each kind of those four divisions and different kinds of properties. So you can get a lot of diversification within the REIT sphere, real estate investment trust sphere. And tax treatment on the dividend will be taxed at your ordinary income rate level. So you got to be aware of that. Unlike corporations, there is no double taxed. In other words, the REITs are not taxed at the corporate level for their income, and then you again are taxed again when they pay the dividend. But REITs are taxed at ordinary income rate level. The right kind of REITs will reduce your portfolio exposure to inflation, because REITs can move up higher, or at least with inflation rates. That's another good reason to do that. Now, do you have any questions about real estate as part of your estate or your investment portfolio or both? 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. So let's take on this question right now.
Hi, my name's Greg. I'm from San Diego, and I listen to you on podcast. I wanted to get your thoughts on day trading. I'm 28 years old and wanted to know what you thought about that, pluses and the negatives of it. Thanks.
Day trading is a good way to lose all your money. How's that? 80 to 90% of all day traders quit because they lose money. And this trick here is on day trading, that means, for everybody else who may not know what that means, it means you buy and sell stock within the same day. You are just playing for the momentum, playing to buy the stock, playing the momentum of that stock for that day. And most people make, well, in their day trades, make more money on the days they're winning than the days that they're losing. In other words, the trades they make, they make more trades, more winning trades than losing trades. More winning trades than losing trades. And they still lose money. And you're asking me, well, how's that possible? Because when they lose much bigger than when they win. It's part of human nature. When the trade is moving up, and it's up, moving up, and it's moving up, and you're making money, you tend to get out faster because you want to lock in that profit. Remember, it's a day trade. You got to be out by the end of the day. When the stock starts to move down when you first buy it in the day trade, it goes down, and it goes down, and it goes down. For some reason, people think that they're right and that it will turn around, and it keeps going down. So their trades, and more often they're right, the trade is positive, but the losses are much bigger than the gains. Day trading is very difficult. Very difficult. And there is no secret formula. Don't buy into that. That's all bunk. If there was some secret way, and all you do is buy this super duper software, if such a thing existed, the people who invented the software wouldn't be selling it to you. They'd be using it and becoming ultra bazillionaires, trizillionaires, whatever you want to call it. Why would they not? It's a formula that works. Well, if it works, then why aren't they using it and not selling it to you? See, it doesn't make sense. Think logically on that stuff. So I don't like it. It won't work and you'll lose money. How's that? That's pretty clear, I guess. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Be the first. What do we got here? Asset allocation. Okay. Our talking points today. We're going to talk about asset allocation today. It's going to be our main talking point, how to minimize taxes and building your wealth. I also want to talk about the strong dollar. Has it turned down? Is it no longer strong? Have you seen what it did this week? What about the market itself? I got two opposing opinions. You know who Muhammad Al-Amarin is? He used to be with PIMCO. He says there's three main risks of the market. And maybe we should turn tactical because of it. Or, my last talking point, well, I might have four actually. My other talking point, are there charts telling us it's time to go long and be in the market again? Have they repaired themselves? We're going to take a quick look at the Dow theory again. A couple months ago, we looked at it and I said, well, it looks like the Dow theory is pointing weakness. Is it now pointing to strength? Those are things I want to talk about. Maybe talk about gold as well. Munich Re, which is a reinsurance company out of Germany, stashes gold and cash because of the negative rates in Europe. Maybe we should talk about that. Think about how that's changed. It changes what people do when you have negative interest rates. It changes. It makes people do things they wouldn't normally do. Make businesses change what they do. And this is what's making it so difficult for us investors trying to determine what is the real result of all this manipulation of currencies and interest rates around the world. What is the result? What do we do? How do we protect ourselves and our clients' money? And this is an interesting article with Munich Re, what they've decided to do because of the negative rates. All very interesting stuff. I didn't forget yesterday, I didn't get to it, the best and worst cities for first-time buyers of homes, cities over 300,000 in population. Still got that. I haven't forgot it. I'm going to try to share it. First, let's take a quick look at the market. It was up again, 155 points on the Dow, 11 on the NASDAQ. Not a lot on the NASDAQ, and up 13 on the S&P. The NASDAQ really trailed today. And looks like we have recovered all of the losses made this year on the two main indexes, Dow and S&P. Don't get me wrong. That's this year. We haven't made new highs because the market started falling last year. And if you're looking at a chart, and I should go to the S&P 500. And if you're looking at a chart, you can see that the market, do you remember that the market peaked last May, right? That's the peak. Then it had a correction in October, remember that? Then it recovered, then it started to go down in December, and then fell sharply in January. Well, it has not recovered to the highs late last year, and it hasn't recovered to the May high, which was close to the highs late last year. In other words, the market has some really big overhead resistance coming in. That's what we call it when it gets up there. And for the Dow, it's only about 200 to 400 points away from that. So it's getting close. So the market was up today. So why do you think the market's been up the last few days? Why? I have a specific reason, I think. It's pretty obvious to me. I'll share that before the end of the day. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and this is Invest Talk, made possible by our firm KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. One of our more popular Saturday morning wealth conferences will be presented at a webinar coming up on April 13th. Survival and Opportunities in a Volatile Market. And it's free, but you do need to sign up. You can go do that by going to investtalk.com.
Hey, this is Mike from Chicago calling about Valent Pharmaceuticals. Symbol is VRX. About a month ago, you said it was a good company and to keep an eye out on it to see what it does in the next month. And overnight, it plummeted to... It's at 33.51. Wondering if this is a good time to pick it up or if this is just going to keep on going down. Love to hear what you got to say about it. Thanks. Bye.
I wouldn't pick it up yet. Nope, not yet. It did plummet. I'm glad I said to watch it, not necessarily buy it. Because why did it plummet? Well, it plummeted because it's going to have to restate its financials. And that's going to mean more pressure from debtors, and it may default on $30 billion of debt because they're not filing their financials on time. There's issues that are not resolved. And we talked about this yesterday when I talked about Chipotle versus Valiant. Chipotle's problem with the food poisoning seems to be behind them. That's gone. Valiant's problem seems to be more still ahead of them because they got to restate their financials. And everybody's going to now scrutinize them every which way sideways. And financials is a very, very difficult problem to overcome. And you want to make sure that the problems with the financials are in the rear view mirror, way back there, behind them. The problems have to be way behind them. And then maybe you can consider it. But I would not consider it now. Valiant's symbol is VRX, everybody, VRX. I would not. It looks like it's real cheap. You look at it, oh man, the PE is only 3. Come on, how cheap can they? And they're growing 20%. How can you not buy this stock? Well, you're not. This is why. They're restating their financials. What do you know what the PE really is? What is the E if they're restating their financials? Do you really know? No, you don't. When companies have to restate their financial, that is not a small red flag. That's a big red flag. It's the first step in aligning your retirement portfolio with your own personal risk tolerance, everybody. You can use our award-winning risk analysis tool. It's free. It's there on the blue box. We're on the blue box on investtalk.com, and it only takes a few minutes.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk.
Let's talk to Matthew in Kansas. How you doing, Matthew?
Good, how are you, Steve?
Good, thanks for the call.
Hey, thanks for taking it. I wanted to thank you guys for what you do. So I wanted to help out one of your clients I heard on the air one day and then ask you a question about a stock, if that was okay.
Okay, sure.
Go ahead. 401k, you had a client ask if you can max out a 401k at 26 grand and then max out a traditional IRA at 6,500. The answer is yes if your modified AGI is not over 98,000.
Ah, so there's an income limit.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, see, I'm not an expert, Matthew. I'm not an expert on this. I know kind of the general rules of the simple stuff, but I manage money.
Right.
I don't manage taxes. So, but I appreciate the call. That's very informative. Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Yep, and I manage taxes, so I was able to help you out on that.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
But AT&T, is it a good blue-chip core basis for my brokerage account?
It is a very good blue chip core holding. I just would not buy it today. It has already gone up quite a bit, 20% this year so far. 20% in just a couple, 3 months. Remember, it's a blue chip core holding. The PE range for the last 5 years is 12 to 17, is right now 14. So it's not out of line, but it was 12 just a couple months ago. Don't buy it now. Let it pull back. I talked about this, I think, yesterday with someone who already owned it, and he wanted to know if he should take some profits. And I told him to hold on to it, but put in a trailing stop as it goes down, because you are going to have a correction. I just don't know when, Matthew, but you will have a correction in AT&T. It doesn't just march up steadily forever. It will stop, and I think you'll get that correction this year. When you have the correction, that's when you pick it up. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for the call, Matthew, and thank you for the information. I appreciate that. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That is our number. You can call it right now if you like. Asset allocation and taxable accounts versus IRA accounts. There's some rules here. If you have both types of accounts, IRAs and taxable account, IRA account, taxable, you can do different things in the different tax-treated accounts that will help maximize your ultimate return. What do I mean? If you have a very high dividend-paying stocks, or you do a lot of trading with a lot of capital gains, you would prefer to get that in your IRA versus a taxable account, because you don't have to pay capital gains tax. You don't have to pay tax on the dividends. Don't have to pay tax on any money that you make in the IRA. You only have to pay taxes when you pull that money out at your retirement. And hopefully your tax rate at that time is very low, so the tax rate will be low. Meanwhile, you get all the growth for all those years. So there's a reason why you want to do certain things in taxable accounts and certain things in non-taxable accounts. Now, of course, you can't be perfect. It never is perfect. It's just never going to be perfect. But, you know, it's very sound money management to put, you know, I tell clients when they give me an IRA to manage, I tell them of the advantages that maybe put it in the higher growth stocks, the higher growth programs I have. Yes, it's higher risk in an IRA, but there's no taxes, and over a long haul, you'll be better off. So those are just some suggestions. You know, we have an article that you can read more about this kind of thing, but those are basically, I just gave you you don't have to read the articles. I just told you the basic differences and why you use taxable versus taxable and when you want to use them in your philosophy of investing. But you can read it. It's right there on investtalk.com, right on the front page. Very good information. I wanted to talk briefly about gold, but there's really not a talking point. But Munich Re stashed, they're putting gold in cash to counter negative rates in Europe. They're putting aside gold. They bought more gold, and they're putting cash aside. Big cash. Remember, if they invested in safe bonds, government bonds, they have to pay to hold those bonds. They have to pay for them. Where if they hold gold or cash, they don't have to pay for that. Now, if Munich Re is doing this, how many other people are doing it? How many other firms and companies are doing it in Europe? is it normal that they buy gold? No. Corporations don't usually hold gold. That's not an asset that they really favor. But are they going to start favoring it if with interest rates so low? I mean, interest rates negative? Is gold going to be a favorite investment vehicle? Now, I don't know the answer to that, but the article is very interesting in that they even mention it, that it is part of what they're doing. Never had that before. I've been reading this stuff forever and never had an insurance company buy gold. It's just not what they do. They might buy buildings. They will buy, they like to buy. Remember, insurance companies have to be very conservative with their money because they have to pay it out in the form of claims, most of it out. So they don't want, they want liquidity, and they don't want to take a lot of risk. And usually that equated to buying bonds. That means that they're not going to make any money on the bonds they're buying. They're making no money. That's not good for insurance companies. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up next half hour, your need for risk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. On the next Invest Talk, 2015 marked the transition from a marketplace where greed was the dominant motivator to one where fear rules. Are you ready for more market madness? That's our main talking point on the next Invest Talk, and we hope you'll join us then. We continue now with this Thursday, March 17th Invest Talk. Do you have a money question? We're here to help. 888-99-CHART is how to get through anytime.
888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm well tonight. How are you?
Good. Thank you for the call.
Thank you. I wanted to know, I have a soft spot for Procter & Gamble. It's one of my sort of buy and hold forever picks in my portfolio. It's running a little bit high right now. I was wondering if it's ever acceptable, like a stock, for example, of that nature that I plan to buy and hold forever. Is it ever acceptable to cash in on that and sell when it is high to invest the amount in another position, and then if Procter & Gamble reduces in some time later to rebuy it at a lower price? Does that make any sense to do that?
Yes, but it's very difficult, James. The answer is yes. When something becomes overpriced, PG is the symbol for Procter & Gamble, everybody. Manufactures beauty care products, cleaning products, diapers, tissues. And it's done very well in the last year or so. It's done, it was a low of 69, now it's 82.83. So it's done very well. And the current PE ratio is like 21, which is pretty darn high for this type of company that had very slow growth. And right now there's no growth. It's actually shrinking a little bit the last 8 quarters in sales. Earnings are still eking up because they're squeezing, profit margins. They're squeezing costs out. And the dividend's very good at 3.2. The reason why it's difficult, James, you have to think about if it's in a taxable account, you're going to have capital gains taxes, right? So yeah. Now you got to have, the stock has to drop even below whatever the tax rate that you paid. In other words, you're going to pay some of the profits out. So you got to make that up too when you buy it back. So you want it to drop far enough below so you can pick it up cheaper. What is probably a better idea, if it's one of those stocks you want to hold on forever, is maybe just cut your holdings, okay, and then buy back more if there's an opportunity down the road. This way, in case it continues up, remember, it's a core holding of yours. You want to hold on to it forever. Many people, when they sell it, they kind of forget about it. They move on to other things, and then by the time they remember it because they're not paying attention because they don't have any investments in it, it's too late. They missed the buy point. So I would probably tell you, if your time horizon is forever, don't sell at all. Just sell some and take some profits. Because it is.
I understand. Maybe,
it is expensive, by the way.
Maybe sell half, for example.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay?
Appreciate, yes, thank you.
Thanks, James. Appreciate the call. He's doing, his thinking is correct. He can reduce some of his risk. It's a big blue chip, solid company that he wants to hold, but he recognizes that it's expensive right now. Now, there's two ways you can do it. You can ignore it, put it in the drawer of your dresser, and never look at it for 10 or 15 years, and you'll do fine. Or if you want to try to be a little sharper, you can sell it, or part of it, and try to pick it up later when it's cheaper. But remember, you got to pay in a taxable account, you got to pay taxes. In a non-taxable account, that idea sounds better. But in a taxable account, it sounds not so great. So maybe compromise, sell half. Just a compromise. Time for Invest Talk 101. What is your need for risk? Your need for risk. I'm not talking about some kind of thrill seekers addiction, everybody. I'm not talking about that. This is the idea about risk that you don't hear that much about. We talk about risk tolerance. Now, you heard me talk about it quite often, and you can take our risk questionnaire and all that stuff. And it's important that you know what your risk tolerance is. But there are those among us who don't have any need to take risk. If you're in retirement years and you have a portfolio with enough money to live on comfortably for the next 30 years, then you really don't have to take any chances at all. So there's not a need to take any risk there, right? You're comfortable, don't really need the money. You don't need growth. But on the other hand, if you're 40 years old and don't have much showing for yourself, and you don't have that much money, then you've got to catch up. So you need to take risks at 40. To get some growth. And the younger investor may be unwilling to take risks, but there definitely is a need to take risks, and they should take risks. It's the risk-reward equation. But you have to think about risk as a necessary fact of life. If you want to be open to the possibility of growing your invested dollars, you have to be open to risk. It's a question of how much risk. Even that person who has no need to take any risks should take a modicum amount of risk just so they can keep their portfolio growing long term, but not, they're a very small portion of your portfolio. You don't have to take huge risks. What for? That's all about risk management. And not talking about the risk management in a portfolio, talking about risk management of your entire financial life. Do you need it? And if you need it, what are you going to do about it? If you don't need it, what are you going to do about it? That's Invest Talk 101, everybody. Do you have any questions about that? I answer questions about this all the time when I sit down and meet with people and say, you really shouldn't take any risks, or you should take very little risk. Why? You don't need to. But most people do need to take risks. It's just part of the old equation. If you have questions, click on Contact Steve. Send me an email, contactsteve@investtalk.com.
How about a list of dividend-focused ETFs? Steve has compiled one for you by popular demand. It's yours when you're an insider. You have access then to these info sheets and much more. Sign up for free on investtalk.com.
Hey guys, this is Martin from San Antonio, Texas. I just had a quick question about an ETF that I invested in a few months ago. It's iShares NASDAQ Biotechnology ETF. That's India. Bravo, bravo. I invested in this, I guess, before I really knew much about investing. I was just kind of, brought in by the historical returns that it had, really good. But right now I have about, roughly $750 worth in this ETF, and it's been getting beat up pretty badly pretty much ever since I bought it. So I'm kind of getting cold feet on this one. I wonder if I should, if you think it's a good idea to hang on to this or just go ahead and sell it and take the short-term loss on it. And also to that effect, if you could talk about the differences between, I guess, short-term versus long-term losses and how that can be deducted. So thanks, guys.
Okay, first of all, let me repeat myself. This is the year, starting late last year, early this year, the time to buy value, not growth. And this is IBB, the iShares for exchange-traded fund, seeking the performance corresponding to the NASDAQ Biotechnology Index. And that is totally growth-focused. Take a look at the chart. It looks very sick. Go look at a value chart of any value stocks. What stocks are working this year? Value stocks. It's time to be in the on the value side of the market. And if you look back, and this is the mistake you made, I'm not trying to be critical, but I want to make sure we're clear. The mistake you made was look back and say, well, gee, it's done so well in the past, so now it looks like a great buying opportunity for the future. That's not necessarily so. That's a very common mistake. Don't do that. Markets change. You kind of have to stay up with the market. Now, IBB, I think you hold on to it till it breaks the lows it made in the beginning or first part of February. It was close, but it's not there yet. If it breaks the lows of that of the most recent February low, if it breaks it to the downside, then I'd get out. Because that's called support. And it looks like it might want to hold support and it might bounce. When it bounces, personally, I'd get out of it and I'd go find something of value. What was value? Oil companies still look pretty cheap to me, even after the run they've had. Okay, that's value. Maybe if they have an oil price pullback, buy that. What else looks cheap? What? You want to look for things that are cheap right now. Not that are growing fast, even though that would be a plus, but you only buy something growing fast if it's cheap. In other words, a great value. I think this year is going to show that value is going to outperform growth. And over the long haul, value does outperform growth. But over the last few years, going back to 2009, growth far outperformed value. So, but that time might be ending. It looks like it's ended to me. IBB, everybody, the biotech. I'd stay out of the biotech ETFs. Too many stocks in there that are not that are all speculative. And that's not where you want to be, I think. Strong dollar. Do you see what the dollar's done this week? The dollar was very strong last year. This year, not so strong. It fell sharply as soon as the Fed spoke and said, hey, we're not going to have four possible increases in interest rates this year. We're only probably going to do two. Market loved it. The dollar fell. And if dollar fell yesterday, and the dollar fell very strong today, what does a weak dollar do? Makes stocks go up. Mining stocks, oil stocks, all up. I had a great day yesterday. Just great. So, you know, what a strong dollar hurts commodities. A weak dollar helps commodities. So, now, is the Fed going to raise the rates twice this year? I don't know if they will. Remember, they rose it at once, and that was January. What happened in December? What happened in January? Market collapsed when they raised the rates. Went down 10% in January, right after they rose the rates. So most likely, most pundits say that we're going to have a June increase. I am not necessarily convinced of that. I think we might get one more increase this year, but I'm not so sure. It could be in June, and that might be just the one that for the rest of the year. Remember, we have an election coming up, and the Fed does not want to be viewed as influencing the election by what it does. So they may only do one and done this year. They say they're going to do two, but don't believe them, everybody. Why? Well, they said it just 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago, they were going to do four. Nothing really changed in the last 2.5 months. The economy is pretty much the same. Now they're going to do two. So did they lie then, telling the truth now? What makes you think they're telling the truth now? They don't know. They don't know. They're telling you what they think, and it's in my book. In my book, I said, experts are always wrong. I'm not excluding the Federal Reserve. They're always wrong. No one is right. They only give you their best guess. Sometimes they're right, but only because they're guessing right. It's their best guess. So take everything with a grain of salt and do your own independent thinking. It's interesting, in my office, Justin, I don't think he thinks the Fed's going to raise at all this year. None. And he's been saying that for several months, ever since they rose the rate in December. So, kind of, you know, no one really knows. I don't know. There's no crystal ball. I have a best guess, too. Mine's just as good as anybody else's. I set aside some time each month to visit with our listeners in our California satellite offices, or by Skype, or by the telephone, if you just want to do it that way. If you're out of range, don't, you know, in our Southern and Northern California offices, you still can become a client. I still want you as a client. Be happy to do it. I have numerous clients outside the state. I'm in the San Jose office on April 6th. San Jose, April 6th. And then San Ramon on April 20th. Now, if you'd like to schedule a time or just find out more about these individual portfolio assessment sessions with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on schedule a meeting.
Annuities, asset allocation, reading stock market trends, building a truly balanced portfolio. If it's important to you and you want to know more about it, we're here for you. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, thank you very much for your show. This is Oscar. Appreciate everything you do. Just wondering if you can tell me what you think about CHRW, that's C.H. Robinson Worldwide, Inc., if you would buy it and at what price. Thank you very much. I'm thinking about buying it. Thank you.
CHRW, C.H. Robinson Worldwide, provides freight transportation services and logistics solutions to companies in various industries. Excuse me. It's going to make $3.79 this year, and then $4.07 next year per share. $4.07 next year. 8% increase this year, 7% increase next year. Sales are pretty much flat. And, of course, they're going to be dependent on economic growth worldwide, right? I mean, that's what they do. They're transportation, logistics. So they do it worldwide. So you need a worldwide growing economy, and you don't really have that going on right now. It's a $74 stock, $74 stock, and it's going to make $4.07. It's kind of expensive. It's a very good company. It pays a 2.3% dividend. It has a very high return on equity. It has a lot of good things going for it. And the stock has been marching up, breaking the it's a new 52-week high. Okay? So you kind of want to wait for a pullback, but it's a very good company. It's just too expensive right now. I'd wait for the pullback and then buy it. Now, you had a pullback in December, January. It was really nice, down in $61. Now it's $73. Don't chase stocks. Don't chase them. Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I'm here to answer your questions. Any money questions you might have, 888-99-CHART. Okay, I really want to get through this to this today because I didn't get to it yesterday. The worst and best cities for first-time buyers with populations of 300,000 or more. The five worst and best. Now, unfortunately, the five worst across the nation, the five worst cities for first-time buyers is in California, all five of them. Anaheim, Riverside, Stockton, Long Beach, Oakland. Unaffordable and volatile. Those people with the salaries in those areas can't afford the houses in those areas. They're the worst across the nation. The best place, first-time buyers in larger cities, 300,000 city population or more, the best is Oklahoma City, then Tulsa, Oklahoma, then Indianapolis, then Pittsburgh, then Houston. Obviously, what do they have in common? They're in the middle of the country. California, no one can ever afford to buy anything in California. I was commiserating with the client today about property taxes. Even though we have Prop 13, property taxes. He was complaining that his property tax is well over $1,000 a month. And he's in retirement, fixed income, and living off his investments. And he says, yeah, you think you have the property paid off, but not when you're paying $1,000 a month property tax. You know, you don't have it paid off. Interesting, huh? California is very, very expensive. And, you know, we have Prop 13, but that only helps you if you've been in the property and you're not buying any new properties. You've been in the property for a long time. It only can, the maximum it can go up is 2% a year. But if you bought, sold and bought a new property, you reset your new property tax at the higher value of the property you just purchased. Now, there are exceptions, I know that, but generally that's the rule. Your questions come first, and they come last, because we're, that's the last one we get to today. Let's take the last couple of minutes here to answer a question. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I listen to your show every day, and I've learned a lot about investing. One of my biggest investment deficiencies is figuring out the best time to sell a stock. I'm always too early or too late. I really stink at that. The learning example I'd like to use is Facebook, symbol FB. I bought it at 75 when I believe they learned how to make money, and it now sells for about 110, so I have a 45% gain in the stock. I still believe Facebook's earnings will continue to increase over the next year or two, but I'm really unsure if the market will continue to give it such a generous multiple. What would you recommend in a case like this and why? Again, thank you so much for a great show. Bye.
Well, I think you've analyzed that pretty darn well about the market, about Facebook, about its high price earnings ratio, about its high growth. And you heard me earlier saying it's time to buy value versus growth. So what do you do about a stock that you have a big win in, it's a growth stock, and you're not sure if the high PE ratio on Facebook right now is 49 PE, you're not sure that it's supportable by the high growth rate, which the high growth rate is at 40-50. And it better stay in that range. If it goes lower than that, it's going to get beat up. Well, this is how you handle it. You draw a trend line. You have a stop. You stay with the stock as long as it's in the upward trend. Now, you might get stopped out of it early. That's possible. But that's okay, because now you've recognized that it's overvalued. And if you get stopped out of it too early, you say, fine, so what? I know I got a good price. Even if it keeps going up. But if you follow it with a stop and it keeps rising and it doesn't hit your stop, you're going to make more and more money as long as it keeps going up. So we have what's called a trailing stop loss on the stock. As long as it keeps going up, you stay with it. As soon as it shows it breaks down below trend, or some other, you could say 10% below its high, you can say 5% below its high, you can put any kind of stop loss you want. I kind of like a trend line on this one. I really do, because that trend line stops you out of, it's $1,111 stock, will stop you out about 107. Okay, and so it can obviously go down that fast, I mean, in a day or two. But at least it stops you out, you don't have to worry about it, and you have a nice profit. Our time is up. A reminder that if you have a question you'd like to ask me directly, you can send me a note by going to investtalk.com and clicking on Contact Steve. That's an email that comes directly to me. I'm Steve Peasley, president of KPP Financial, which is a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and everybody at KPP, thank you for listening today. I hope you have time to join us again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.